So I will first update you to the latest available cross-module data sets, including all these future cross-module surveys will be coming soon. And then I will review the current constraints on this inflation model, on inflation model and spectrum. The key thing I will be talking about is the extensions of the standard parameterizations of primordial power spectra, and how well can we constrain the primordial tensor spectrum and primordial scalar spectrum. And finally, I will give the conclusion. So the standard model cosmology can be described by six parameters. All these observations can be explained by the standard model and the CMB, the weak lensing, supernova, large scale structure, lambda alpha forest. They all consistent with the standard lambda CDM model. This is showing how well this is consistent with the observations. So the left panel is the WMAP 5-year CMB temperature power spectrum. So the red line is just the lambda CDM, the best fit model. And the right panel is the latest released SDSS data release 7 luminous LRG samples. This is reconstructed matter power spectrum and they fit the prediction of lambda CDM very well. And also the BAO, baryonic acoustic oscillations, is detected at the 3 sigma level, as you can see from this plot. Okay, so the six parameter model is not everything, otherwise I won't be talking about giving a talk here. We should all go home and everything is done. There's a lot of extensions of the standard model because we have more and more data to compare the theories with the observations. So you can, for late universe, you can do dark energy, dark matter, and radiation neutrinos. For early universe, there are a lot of things, including the extension of primordial power spectra, and Andrew Froh just talked about the non-Gaussianity. Non-Gaussianity now become a very big subject of cosmology. We have curviton models, particle creation during inflation, which they all work with Lev Kaufman, Neil Barnaby, and Dimitri. Also, you can create a non-Gaussianity from preheating. The work with Andrei Frolov, Dick Bond, and Lev Kaufman. And also, you can do phase transition in early universe, topology different, all sorts of things. But today, I won't have time to talk about them. I will just talk about one thing, the primordial power spectrum. So this will be models predicting this thing. So from early 80s, you have inflation models, and 90s, Lev Kaufman wrote, and Lindsay and Starobinsky wrote a famous paper about parametric resonance of preheatings and all these preheating theories. And until the, just this year, we have we found that the broad parametric resonance can also be happening for these string theory motivated roulette inflation models. Okay, so all of these theories, how can you compare them with the observations? So the one thing you can do is to search for non-trivial signals such as non-Gaussianity, gravitational waves. Another thing is that people have always been doing is just to look at the two-point correlation function, i.e. the primordial power spectrum. So the standard way of doing it is just using the AS, the NS, the fairly straightforward thing, a power law parameterization or scalar power spectrum. So the end run is not included in early 90s, but it's included in, not included until WMAP is out because we don't have data to constraints. people start to be interested in the end-run non-trivial, so the deviation from power law over scalar power spectrum, and also people start to be interested in the spectral index of a tensor power spectrum. So you can do all sorts of extensions. You can add more and more terms in these things. So in my point of view, you can add, you can do all those things, but you need observations to be able to confirm this or compare with this extension. Otherwise, you're just doing some ad hoc things. Another thing is that you need models to predict these things. So this two standards for good science. You need, first of all, you need a model and then you need observation. So I will first update you to the latest observations that you can be that can be used to constrain the primordial power spectrum. So because CMB, the most precise observations that constrain the early universe physics, we have the famous WMAP. Also, I have included the ACPA, the latest one, FORT, and the BICEP or CBI. Also, I have used the latest release, the Type 1A supernova samples, including the SDS supernova. Also, the SNL 3-year data will come out soon. It's, so I have talked to Ray Kauberg in astronomy department of the University of Toronto. So they are working on this thing, and they told me they will release it very soon. And I should get be able to get this data in a few months, and we will update the things. The weak lensing. So the Cosmos data and all this the CFHTLS, this data released at 07. And the reason is, but people are not quite using it very often. The reason is just very simple. You don't have a Cosmos MC plugin for it. Fortunately, I wrote one, then I can use it. So I wrote a Cosmos MC plugin for this, the four blue color data sets. So all these data sets with the blue color is that I wrote some Cosmos MC plugin. The large scale structure, the galaxy power spectrum. So just this year, the SDS is data release 7. I included in early this year, but now it's also in a standard Cosmos package. You can find it. You can also use it. The SDS Lyman alpha, I wrote a three-dimensional parameter space chi-square fitting routine to calculate the likelihood. This is based on the simulations by Pat McDonald et al. Also, I included the HST constraint. This is not a double counting. You may wonder why I use HST here and here. But this is supernova. It's not constraining the Hubble parameter at all, because you marginalize over the absolute magnitude of a supernova. Then you don't have any constraint on H naught. But this is directly constrained based on the distance ladder. So this is an independent constraint. Also include other data sets. Okay, so with all this, everything. I need a tool to use it, right? So this Cosmos MC. I run Monte Carlo Markov chains. So I have to modify Cosmos MC, of course, because first of all, I have to modify it because I have a I have to extend the theories, the standard treatment of NSAS. I will present to you soon, very soon, how we modify the parameterization of primordial power spectrum. And also, we have done a lot of work on doing parameterizations of dark matter, dark energy, and all these things. I also write a very powerful gadget to do all these visualizations. You cannot do good science without visualizations, because it's important for you to get a physical intuition. Okay, so how good are these data sets? Are they really consistent with each other? And are we really trusting? Do we really trust them? So this left panel, I'm showing a dark energy equation state versus the matter density fraction. So the standard supernova, I'm, by default, I'm using the source 2 light curve fitting. Maybe you are not the expert in supernova data analysis, but to be short, it's just the same. The supernova doesn't directly give you constraints on W and omega m. You have to do data analysis, and you have to fit the light curve. But there are different light curve fitting methods. One is from SNLS group. SNLS group they use the so-called SORT light curve fitting template. So you get this green contours, and then you get this combined result. But that's not a unique light curve fitting formula. You can also use the so-called MLS, multiple color light curve fitting, and then what the standard for. This has a very long history, this light curve fitting formula. So what's the difference between these two light curve fitting? To be short, it's just the sort to allow the dependence of absolute supernova magnitude on the color. So supernovas have colors, and so if you allow the dependence of absolute magnitude on color, which means the supernova is not a standard candle, they have the magnitude depending on their color. This thing, the MLSCS, essentially, you just put a very strong cutoff on the prior. You don't allow it to be the absolute magnitude to be varying depending on the color. So this is allowing color variance, color dependence. This is not allowing color dependence. Of course, this is not precise, just giving the bigger physical interpretation of these two, the difference between these two data analysis. So you see the very big difference between this the constraints on W. So there's a lot of systematics. So people always think, okay, W is minus one, we don't need dark energy observations. That's not true. For now, we cannot be so sure that W is minus one. So there are systematics in supernova data sets. It can be the best fit for this supernova only. The number in my mind, I think the SDS paper is minus 0.76 for supernova only. Combining this MLSDS with all these data sets is minus 0.88. If you use SORT2, it's much better. It's very close to minus one. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the panel, the right panel, which is the sigma 8 versus the omega m. So there are lots of different versions of how sigma 8 is constrained, people talking about all the time. So you have to look at different data sets. You cannot just give a number, say I combine everything, I get a number. You have to look at how it's actually constrained. So I put everything here on this one plot, you get it. So Lyman alpha forest. According to the simulation done by Pat McNaughton et al., they really prefer a very high sigma 8, going to like minus 10-ish. But all the other data sets, they are consistent with 0.80-ish. So it's really the Lyman alpha force driving sigma 8 up. Still, at the 2 sigma level, all the data sets are consistent. And another thing is the latest release, the SDSS large scale structure is a galaxy power spectrum. It prefers a bigger omega m.
The large scale structure constraint on sigma 8 come from?
This constraint on sigma 8?
Yeah, from yeah. Large scale structure.
So in principle, if you don't know anything about bias, there should be no constraint at all. But you have a bias, you have to choose a prion bias.
You put a prion bias?
You have to, because if you can choose, you can say you put a flat prion on B, so it's still a bias, because you can also put a flat prion on B squared. It's implicitly a prion, you have to prion
to is that done just by fire?
So this is by Reid et al. I just used their likelihoods and modified it and put it into Postman C. This was just LSS plus HST constraint on H naught. You get this constraint, this extended equilibrium.
But you can get bias from redshift disturbed and redshift disturbed.
Yeah, you marginalize over it. This plot is marginalized over all the other parameters.
Okay.
Right.
So what do you do to the CMB that looks a bit higher than the scripture? Is it just WMAP or what is it?
This is WMAP plus all these things I showed in the previous slide.
So the other stuff being
everything here.
So
as I said, LS is now prefers a larger signal, omega n. Well, before the data rate 7, people are thinking about 0.27.
Just a quick comment on that. So one of the interesting issues, however, is that sigma a from CMB can actually depend somewhat on the marginalization over Sinyaya's Lobov signal, which is not included in this. I mean, in principle, that's another aspect of CMB, but the bottom line is that there is a primordial determination, but there is also a contaminant from the Sinyaya and Soldovich, and so they sort of play off each other as well.
So the CMB component, yeah, brings up another point. So it's also slightly dependent on the SD templates that you are using. People usually use the WMAP team's SD template, but I'm using another one, which is done by Dick's students and with the hydrodynamic simulations. It's a slightly different SD template, so we'll shift the omega simulator by a little bit. Okay, so we've done the current data sets. Now I update you to the future one. So I only run the simulation for, I will only show you the simulations of these larger funds, these things here. Also, I put these other experiments here, but I won't show everything because I just pick up these things as representative data sets and run simulations, and I will give the constraints on the parameters. Right. I think, yeah. Also, interesting thing is that we have a lot of local people doing on these future substrates. Like Mazi is on Spider, and the Goico is on Chan, I think. And we have local SNLs. Okay. So, we have all these data sets we need to constrain the theories, not just the phenomenological parameterization power law and the extension of power law. We need to know what kind of models can predict these power spectrums. So the one simplest thing that you can think about is single field inflation. So if you assume slow law, which means all these parameters are very small, you essentially get n round the conjoining of the scalar power spectrum is the second order of these slow raw parameters. For the first instance, that's what people are usually doing. You can think it's zero. So if you take n round to be zero, the scalar power spectrum is just the power law. The tensor to scalar ratio will just be, and the index, they are constrained by the consistency relation. So they all related to the slope of the potential, which is also approximately the expansion related to the expansion epsilon, which is h minus h dot over h squared, which I will talk about later. So epsilon v is roughly epsilon, and it's related to the r and the nt. Also, ns minus 1 is related to the eta v and epsilon v. So you essentially, for very this is a very strong assumption. You assume these are very small, but with this assumption, you get a minimal model, which is small ns minus 1, small r, 0 and run. So it's a minimal model, you can essentially classify all these minimum models into a two-dimensional plane by epsilon v and eta v or r and ns. This is the one classification used by Frank Bluebrook. So the small field in Brayton usually predict a very small tensor R, and the larger field inflation usually predicts a larger detectable R, and hybrid inflation and the prediction of R. So this is the plot showing everything. So this is the current constraints, the wave contours, using all these data sets I've showed, the supernova weak lensing, LiMAR for larger scale structure, and the CMB. This is the forecast, so now plans 4.5 years, and future weak lensing. About half size as the ring, and future supernova as the future DAO. Okay.
Yeah. So I put a fiducial model.
But you are assuming that the running of the spectra
is
zero.
Yeah, no running. So
but when you assume that the spectra, the running of the spectra is zero, that set, if you go back one slide, So if you look at the first equation you have over there, that becomes a differential equation that you can always solve and reconstruct a potential exactly.
Sure, I will talk about this later.
Okay.
So this is just talking about the minimal model. This is what people have done, and I just updated it with the current data.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing new. Right? So lambda factor of force. If you just look at this plot, you believe zero running, you believe everything. So three things are away from the current data. But you have to be, so where are the constraint from? R less point than 0.16. It's a very tight constraint. So where is it from? So you have to understand it. So there's a very strong degeneracy between the scalar power spectrum and the tensor power spectrum. Currently, the BB spectrum, the BB CMB spectrum is not detected, so there are no smoking gun for the tensor. To suggest that the degeneracy between the tensor and scalar power spectrum that produces this R less than 0.16. If you release things, let's say, if you release, select the weak lensing and the Lyman alpha forests, and together with a bit a large scale structure, you can fix sigma 8 at this high case, the smaller scales. And on the other hand, you can use CMB to fix the scale perturbation on the larger scale. If you connect them and assume a single power law, you don't have freedom to kill anything. To explain the residuals, you have to put in very tight constraints on R. So this is what produce, if you release all these, if you don't use all these small scale data sets, we can think LIMAR and large scale structures. So you will end up with very loose constraints. This is just I run the chains yesterday and I get this number. The thing told me is 0.4, but I, since I improved the code and all the other polarization data sets, it's a bit tighter. So if you assume no running, but you just use CMB only, you actually don't have this type constraint. 0.32 is absolutely consistent with the lambda factor. Also, if you allow running, which means you don't really connect this large scale power to the small scale power, you allow a variation and not a single power law. So if you release and make the loser, the connection loser, then you get also, a little constraint on R. This is also consistent with lambda factor 4.
Sorry, will you just explain again, which data sets are you using now?
So this thing is with all these data sets, CMB line structure. This plot is just everything. These numbers I have explained in these brackets.
So you're still using all the data sets, but what are you...
No, this plot is using all the data sets.
Yeah.
This number is using CMB only.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm not sure why do you say data sets there?
So I explained which data.
CMB.
Only.
Okay.
Yeah, CMB. So all the CMB data sets.
But nothing else.
Okay. So we understand the degeneracy between the, if you allow non-trivial scalar power spectrum, the degeneracy between the tensor and the scalar power spectrum. Okay, so one thing you can do is you extend the parameterization of scalar and tensor power spectrum. Allow more freedom, extend it. You are not only interested in the minimal model, which is only higher than the S. We are interested in a much wider model. And the reason for doing this is because we have a lot of data to constrain these models. We are not just like 10 years ago, we can only imagine see flat spectrum. We can see much more details now, and we should extend all these standard things. So there are two ways to do this. One is just you add mnemonically and take these three functions and either expand it at basis, using a few basis, or take the values on a few pivots and interpret in between. Or you can do another thing, which is just mentioned. You can actually solve the primordial power spectrum by assuming a single field expansion history. So if you know the expansion history, you can actually calculate it very precisely. So I will first focus, I will talk about both the let's look at the topological treatment. So people have done a lot of things on these subjects. So I won't go into details of this. If you're interested, we can talk about the relation between our work and their work later after the talk. Okay, so what we have done, first of all, because we have a lot of data constrained the scalar power spectrum, so we can first of course we can extend the parameterization over the scalar power spectrum. It's a very straightforward thing. I don't like to extend to add more terms on the polynomial expansions because all these polynomial expansions they don't favor a flat spectrum. Right? So there's a very strong prior on the so-called flow equations. It's actually very strong flow equations. So actually very strong priors on this scalar power spectrum, which they don't favor flat spectrum. So we need a method to become, have sufficient large parameter space that allows the flat spectrums, almost flat spectrums. So what we do is we take the scalar power spectrum at a few knots, take here, 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 and just interpret it, and you get a spectrum. For the tensor, we don't have even constraint on the amplitude, so if the data are not telling you anything, you better not use complicated parameterization, otherwise you're just playing around with the priors, no constraint. So for the tensor, we just use very simple things, standard things. Okay. Of course, once the future CMB polarization experiments data are very available, let's say CMB4, you can actually get very much detail, many details of the tensor spectrum. But at that time, you can use also extended standard parameterization of tensor parameterization. Then you can use n plus n and so forth. But I won't be talking about it today because I will be focusing on the client data and all the things. I won't be talking about CMB4. If you are interested in it, I can come talk to you later. Okay. This is a reconstructed power spectrum. There are also colors on this plot, but I will explain to you one by one. So these spectrums, these are scalar, tensor, they are all one sigma spectral arrays consistent with data. So you can see, I also put a fiducial m squared phi squared, which is a green color, and a scalar, m squared green, m squared phi squared scalar, m squared phi squared tensor. Also lambda phi to the fourth scalar, lambda phi to the fourth tensor, the purple colors. Also the best fitter curves.
OK, so what we're seeing is, remember previously, we have very tight constraints on R, which is roughly 0.16, about something here, or something here. So if you only use the standard parameterization of scalar power spectrum, you don't allow tensor up to here, right, at 2 sigma. So even for now, if we release the assumption of the power law, scalar power spectrum, you have to allow very large tensor spectrum, up to about 9.9-ish. Another thing we can see on this plot is the second point I want to make is that you can actually compress all these tremendous data sets into this error bus plus the correlation between the neighboring bands. There's no strong correlation between this band and this band, but there's a little constraint between the neighboring bands. So actually all the information on this data sets are mostly compressed into this error bus, this diagonal correlation, the neighboring correlations. It's a tremendous information compression, and this is how what current data is telling us. So you may be wondering, what's if I can allow this crazy tensor spectrum, what you will see in the CL space, the data. Actually, there's nothing strange. Even if you allow these large tensor modes, there's nothing strange in the data space. You can still fit the data fairly well, nothing strange. You can have larger VE, but of course it's still consistent with zero in the current data. So you can also vary the interpolation method. Remember that I have to interpret it between these scalar knots. Just test how good this method is. I can use the Chebyshev interpolation. And this is what I get. Still, large tensor is allowed if you allow this arbitrary scalar power spectrum. Also, the correlations are similar in this. Okay. So this is interesting. The more interesting thing is how well can we do in the near future, just the next 10 years, next generation data. Okay. So this, I produced mock data with 2.5 years and the weak lensing and the DAO and supernova. So you can really constrain the scalar power spectrum to very, very precise, high precision. So the tensor, also you can get a very tight constraint 0.04-ish without assuming a power loss scalar power spectrum. So you can also vary the number of knots, because in the future you have more data, you can have more degrees of freedom. So if you add more knots there, what you can see is at a larger, very large scale and at a very small scale, well, the data is not constrained to the spectrum. So you end up with a lot of prior dominated fluctuations. But at the observable range, they are still very well constrained by the data. So which means when you are doing parameterization, you should not trust things too much on these poorly constrained things, because it's really prior dominating. But on this data, well constrained by data, on this range, you can do a lot of interesting things. Okay, this is a really fun plot. It's a big love. So first, I just show a model-independent parameterization of the scalar power spectrum, the tension of 7 kilohertz or 13 kilohertz, 13 knots. So the really the thing you really want to do is you assume single field inflation and solve it consistently. So there are two reasons why we need this consistency relation. One is the data is not constraining. And you can see even this is done by the forecast data sets, the prime 2.5 year and all the forecast weak lensing and supernova.
you cannot really test this consistent relation predicted from single field inflation. So this line is showing this r equals to minus 0.8 mt. This dot is the fiducial model I put in when I run the simulations. So we cannot really reconstruct it. We cannot really find this dot for our constraint things on this line. So data doesn't tell you unless, of course, if you have future very precise CNB polarization data, let's say CNB core, things might change. But if you just consider Planck like this, you don't have a constraint on NT. Therefore, this thing, we have this theory, beautiful theory, the beta doesn't constrain. Therefore, we can take it and put it in a theoretical prior. Right? So we can take these relationships. This is the standard permutation that people are always using. But in our case, we allow arbitrary single field inflation. Therefore, the relationship, I can also write it as a formula. It is two solutions. It's a solutions of differential equations. So it's not a very simple relationship, but it's still doable. We should use this relationship as a prior then and see how well we can constrain the single field inflation model. Okay. So how do we do it? This is the standard thing that people are using. This is more crazy things I have been done. So people know that if you have slow raw inflation, we can approximate this scalar power spectrum and the tensor power spectrum with these formulas. It only depends on the expansion history. Basically, H is a function of ln A. If you know this, you can calculate PS and PT, the scalar power spectrum and the tensor power spectrum with just these simple formulas. Straightforward, you put it into cost MC and then run it. Okay, we get a constraint. You need to worry about two things. One, if you allow arbitrary expansion history, you're interested in non-trivial single field inflation models. How precise these things are? They are very good for space observation, let's say it's only little deviations. We have more and more data coming in the near future. The Planck, CNB4, we have tighter constraints. So if you want to do precision cosmology, why not just use the exact power spectrum? If you just then it's a bit of work, but once it's done, it's done. You can use the precise ones just to test all these models. So I decided to just write a modular to calculate these things for arbitrary single field model and then put it into cost MC. Now I will not use this again because it's just a approximation. Okay, I will show you how well these slow draw operations are. If we have epsilon roughly constant, but not the slow speed, you can calculate the PSPT by solving the differential equation that we just showed here. We calculate it. Of course, you may wonder what initial condition I use for this differential equation. So, vector mode functions, you put at a very large scale as a sub horizon. We evolve it until it's x the horizon, and then freeze. And then you can calculate the PSPT when it's freeze. So, it's a straightforward thing, and then you done it. Okay, so the black curves are precise power spectrum that I calculated by solving the differential equations. The red ones are just these slow raw approximations in formulas. They're not bad. 2% deviations for these things. The order of d ln epsilon d ln k is about 0.1 in this example. A few percent deviation is not a big deal for current data. You cannot constrain things that precise. You can use it. But as the future data are coming soon, I propose that you should be using the precise ones. There's no reason you're not using. It's just the more coding. Once it's done. Okay, I will show you a crazy model, which is not really a, not really predict a flat spectrum. But if you know crazy things, you know, remember this log scale, so this is 10 times larger than this, instead, close to a one errors in PS. The PT is still good fitting. The reason is the tensor power spectrum is only sensitive to the H and not epsilon. So to make deviation in this tensor power spectrum, you need a crazy A epsilon, not a crazy B long epsilon. Crazy epsilon not that easy. You have to really go wild and ignore it, and will be really inconsistent with current observation. So we are not interested in this case. Although my code can solve it. Okay. So also we can see for tensor, our previous treatment used power law, not that bad. So tensor, even for this wild model, tensor is still close to a problem. Right. Okay, so now I have this plugin to calculate all this from the expansion history. Then you can calculate PSPT using my cosmetic plugin, use all the datasets, run Markov chains, and get posterior expansion histories. And then all these expansion histories, the one-to-one mapping to prior potentials, to a potential. Of course, not all potentials can give you acceleration, give you inflation. Some potential, for example, the bottom of m squared phi squared, you don't get the inflation at all. So there's a prior space in the potentials. This prior space is one-to-one mapping to map to the acceleration constraints. It's one-to-one mapping. So I can directly use this as I use the data and the constraint as a map back to the potential space. So by doing this, you essentially constrain all these single-field inflation models without assuming anything, just a single-field inflation. No slow-draw assumption, nothing. Okay. One thing I need to mention is I have to put some prior on these things when you do statistics around Markov chains. For current data, there's a bit of dependence on these priors because they are not really constraining the situation that well. But with future data, especially when the feeble got active, these things will come, you will get very good constraint with manipulation. Okay. So I run these things, I get a reconstructed power spectrum with the assumption of single field inflation. So all these trajectories are fully consistent with single inflation models. So each tensor is a scalar by this consistency relation, functional relationship. Okay, so the one thing we can see is that even you assume the consistency relationship, you don't get a very tight constraint on the tensor. You still not get it. The 0.16 is just some illusion. The very strong prior, you assume uniform acceleration, you get 0.16. Once you release this stuff, there's very strong dependency between tensor and scalar. So you get like 0.866-ish constraint. Also, you can, from each of these pair, and scalar tensor, you can reconstruct the potential just by integrating the potential equations. What the plot is telling you that the larger the slope is, the larger the delta phi is. Because these small things below this red curve, a little bit, it's a flatter trajectory. The flatter potential, you get a smaller delta phi. This will be more or less reconstruct. You can also do this thing by reconstructing the epsilon. Minus the definition epsilon, which is minus h dot minus h squared. So inflation is equivalent to zero, epsilon between 0 and 1. So from the expansion history, you can definitely calculate the epsilon trajectory. Of course, by definition, my code only calculates the trajectory between, for epsilon between 0 and 1, so you will never see an epsilon. But because the data already constrained, the epsilon is very small. This was several means, small epsilon and small eta. So this is a reconstructed epsilon. So you can multiply it by 16 to get the constraint on against the scalar ratio r, I roughly get the 16 epsilon. Just for fun, you can do very similar things for basic universe dark energy. So if you assume dark energy is a scalar potential, the scalar of intensities, and you assume some functional form of the epsilon, basically I just do a first order transformation. So you can reconstruct this epsilon V, which is V prime over V squared. It's for inflation, epsilon V is approximately epsilon. For later universe, of course, you have dark matter, all sorts of things, epsilon, epsilon V. But you can reconstruct it consistently with this. This is different scales. This epsilon's an order of magnitude larger than this. This is as far as 0.05. Which means for late dark energy, you don't really know much about it. You can have a larger slope, small slope. It's not that tightly constrained and inflation, almost that potential. For late dark energy, you can have essentially lots of degree of freedom. This is because we have almost 10 e-folds of data for fully unit inflation. We can marginally half e-folds for basically, okay. So another thing people might be interested in is if you have a fiducial model, the same square by square, you believe in it, just your best model is based on gradients. You want to know what will be measured in the near future. Yes, we can, and just come. No CMB code, just come. No spider, everything was in front of the flying. More than half sky is scanned already. 2.5 years, they will scan the full sky 5 times. Okay, so once it's done, look at this function. If m squared pi squared is the real thing, this is using 7 knots, using consistency functional relationship. You can constrain the tensor, you can constrain the scalar constellation. You can see very clear protection of B-mode. This one thing I'm sure. And this is produced by Lansing. And this is just tensor. This fiducial model is 0.125 B. The reconstruction is very consistent and very consistent. The error bar is about 0.05. assuming the foreground. By the way, I have assumed a very conservative foreground for Planck. For Planck, you're doing much better. You can imagine this machine. I'm not very optimistic, therefore I'm using very pessimistic foreground models. Okay, the last fun thing you can do is directly in the write down potential, right? Why do you do all these sorts of things? You just write down potential, solve it, and take the special. Reconstruct. Okay, I expand it to order 4. The one fun thing you can do is you can, from many string theory modulated models, they don't like larger delta phi. They say you should not have a delta phi larger than Planck max. This is reduced Planck max. You can put this as a prior or not. You can use this prior or not use. They give very different answers posteriorly. So this is a reconstructed potential with no small field assumption. The only inflationary assumption. Just to give inflation in the fourth order expansion. This is the posterior potential. This is with on the same scale with the small building assumptions. So you actually limit all these delta phi to a very narrow range. So what you are doing is actually you pick out this trajectory on this plot, discard all these large delta phi trajectories, leave only small ones. You get this. this is much much tighter constraint. This is a very interesting thing. I will leave it in, for fun for string theorists. Okay, so my conclusion. So current constraints on R, very tight. People are saying lambda factor force is rolled out. It's actually very strongly dependent on your assumption of the scalar power spectrum. If you release all these tight, strong priors, you allow arbitrary single fields, just single fields, no, even no field, no other things, you can actually already get very, allow very large tensor. Okay, the good thing is the next generation data will sort things out. Even you don't assume anything on this, or you have to assume some smoothness, let's say, are using 7 knots or 10 knots, you can go crazy and use 1,000 knots. But it's quite model independent thing. You can get higher than 0.04 with a very pessimistic trunk foreground model. So this is very nice thing that we will see in 2 years. Okay.
So since we're running a little bit behind, maybe there's time for one question. Okay, I have a question, which is if the consistency relation is satisfied, then it's the NT Lorentz constraint is so small that each property will not be effective. Did you find any cases, these other more general single field evolution where NT was big enough, or if they were consistent with current data that NT was big enough to be,
So this is already in the future state, Planck state. So you don't have any consistency relationship to tag. But I would say this is not, Planck is targeting at the temperature possible. This is the ultimate story of temperature. But you have a lot of room for the CMB polarizations in the near future. You have CMB pole, spider, all these things.
I think there's this paper by Knox and Song where they showed that even if you just took the variance
I would not definitely say anything because I need to run simulation for CMB to give you a quantitative answer. What I would say is for Planck, it's not there. For CMB four, it might be there, but I have to run simulations.
Did you find any examples where a single field model that's consistent with current data but with NT, significantly fit, 0.2 or something like that?
See, in this graph. So this NT is we can read it from the
paper. Okay, so that's it.
Yeah, so this consistency relationship with the consistency included is the tensor state. So NT is all. It's not a large NT. It's 10 equals.
Okay. So we now have lunch and then we start up again at 2:00. So I'm going to try to hand these up to everybody as quickly as possible. And then what I'm going to say is that so the goal, depending on whether you're from CETA or perimeter, at lunch you might describe as Dick said, turbulent.